Yes, it's not your radio exploding, it's a volcano erupting. It's the amazing sound of the earth moving deep beneath the surface. In the underworld, I guess you could say. That underworld is the realm which fascinates my next guest. Dr. John Jackson is a geologist who's been an advisor to many major petroleum companies. And rather than rely on PowerPoint presentations to tell people the story of what lies beneath the earth, he's been using painting. And he joins us from the ABC studios in Brisbane. Hi, John.
Hi, Michael.
So you are a geologist. How did that begin? Were you the sort of kid who liked playing with rocks?
Oh, my first job was to earn enough money to buy a cabinet to put my rocks in because my mother was fed up with them under the bed.
Oh, you kept them under the bed like a guilty secret?
Absolutely, because I had so many of them.
And why? Why were you collecting? Isn't one rock enough for any kid?
Every rock's different. Every rock tells another story. Every rock's got a different personality.
And were you part of a circle of boys, or boys and girls, who collected rocks, or were you a lonely geologist?
I guess I was a lonely geologist, and you've just alerted me to something. There were no children as neighbours. I was on a farm, and I guess my rocks were my best buddies.
Gee, that's a bit sad.
It was a lot of fun because I got to know them very early in life.
You had your own stratum of society.
I did.
A little geological joke there. So they call you the rock doctor. Why is that?
Well, for a long time, I went out of my way to colour rocks differently to everybody else. And when I settled in Queensland about 10 years ago, the local publican thought that I spent a lot of time looking after rocks and termed the name the Rock Doctor, and it sort of stuck.
It is the kind of joke they make in a Queensland pub. And that gives it context. I can get it now. This bloke's a rock doctor. I totally get it. So when did all this start, this business of painting rocks? Because geologists usually use graphs and, you know, illustrations of a more technical kind. Why did you turn to painting?
I was working in Africa and having some difficulty in pulling together a team that involved a number of nationalities, a number of languages, and in fact, they had never been introduced to geology, let alone drilling below the surface of the ground before. So I decided to buy a calico bedsheet, purchase some fabric paint, and I thought that way I could hot iron it, keep the colour permanent, roll it out in the wet and the mud, walk on it, roll on it, and I'd have a permanent non-240 volt presentation. And I rolled it out at the crew change time every morning at 7 o'clock. And before long, I not only had the technicians and the engineers involved, I had the truck drivers and the cooks and the chefs, and everybody wanted to know what it was about.
This is an illustration to explain what the geology of the area is, the geology of where you were working.
I wanted to show them what we were attempting to do with the project. And that brought all sorts of things to the project. People who were worried about the environment started to ask questions. People who wanted to know how the sand got down there were asking questions. What were fossils all about?
And I gather that some people were so impressed with your sheet images that they wanted to wear them.
Oh, yes. There was a situation one morning when all the women decided they were coming out. They didn't come out one by one. They must have agreed in the kitchen that they'd come out en masse. And they came out and they saw the painting and all started giggling. Well, I couldn't understand what was going on, so I asked this chap, would he translate for me? And he says, oh, boss, you're not going to like this. I said, well, what's the problem? Tell me anyway. He says, well, they want to cut it up and put a hole in it and wear it.
Well, that seems fair. Perhaps you should have diversified into fabric production.
Well, every now and then I paint a caftan and wear it to an art opening, and I paint a local subject. For example, up here I live in a place called the Scenic Rim, and at present I'm working on painting a caftan with the Scenic Rim on it.
Well, I guess we should explain to the listener what your paintings look like. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN, and I'm talking to John Jackson, who is a geologist who has turned to painting, and the painting has now taken off in its own right. It's no longer a way of instructing people, I guess. It's just well, they're just marvellous to look at. So how are we going to evoke this? Perhaps if we look at one. Now, I've got your book here, which is called The Art of the Underworld, and the one I'm looking at is the Niger, which is, I guess, what is that? So you've got a big blue swirl across a canvas that's almost sort of psychedelic in the colours you've chosen. It could be a bit of sort of trippy kind of painting, very sort of 60s or 70s kind of trip painting. But I can see that there are rocks and there are great red veins. What am I looking at?
Well, that was prompted by a trip I'd done to Mali in West Africa. And I was talking to all sorts of people, people that rode camels, people that sold petrol and drums, people that sold water. And I wanted to get the picture across to them of what was underneath where we were all travelling. So the blue through the centre of the picture is the Niger River. And then underneath the Niger River is a rainbow running from top to bottom. And that rainbow represents the suture line when West Africa crashed into East Africa and the two cratons or large pieces of old rock came together to form Africa.
So can I just interrupt you? So this is actually an aerial view, is it, but with X-ray vision, with the Niger River sitting on the top and then looking at the geology that lies beneath the river?
It's like a pull apart of an engine, only I'm doing it with rocks.
Yep.
So you can not only look at the plan view, you can look down into it as well. So it's both a traditional geological cross-section and a map, but at many levels.
Oh, I see. So you read it as a horizontal cutting through the earth as well, do you?
Well, at the top there are some round shapes, which are the Saharan sand grains. And then you look beneath those again, and you see some red flashes, which are the rift valleys of West Africa, where Africa was split apart when the Atlantic Ocean opened up. In fact, all my paintings have a story attached to them. It's one of the few disciplines I have when I paint, is they must tell 100 million
stories.
600 million year story.
We're just having a little bit of trouble with that line, John. I'm not sure whether you can still hear me, but the line is breaking up. We'll just see if we can attend to that. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart, and I'm talking to John H. Jackson about his book, The Art of the Underworld. And it's a series of paintings that he's done that take him all the way back to Africa when he was a geologist working with various oil companies and was teaching the local people what lay beneath their feet. And he's gone on painting these pictures right up until the present day. And there are pictures in here of scenes in Australia. And they're quite psychedelic. They're pictures of rivers and rifts and of rocks. And I think John rejoins us now. John, you're still with us.
Yes, I am.
I don't know why you're breaking up like that. Now, how do you decide on these colours? Because it occurs to me that under the ground there is no colour. It's pitch black down there.
Well, for a long time I'd been taught certain colours went with certain rocks. So limestones were blue and sandstones were yellow and granites were pink. And that's the world of geology in most industries. And I felt it quite constraining, and I thought, you know, a rock has a personality just like a person does.
No, a rock does not have a personality just like a person does. What does that mean?
It absolutely does. In fact, when I paint a rock, it's like painting a portrait, really. You know, there are wrinkles and there are warts, and it tells a little bit of the history. There are scars, and some rocks are more friendly than other rocks. Some rocks are very stressed.
Describe a stressed rock. What's a stressed rock like to be in the presence of?
A stressed rock has lots of fractures through it. You might see little quartz veins where it's had hot liquid squirted through it. You might see that it's been folded and crumpled. I saw some on the weekend when I was down in the mid-north coast of New South Wales. Beautiful old character rocks like meeting your great-grandmother. I mean, it was, and they speak to you of what they've been through. And that speaking gives me an idea of what sort of colour it wants to be. I mean, for example, a coal, which a lot of people talk about these days, you know, dirty old coal. Coal to me is really royal. So for me, a coal wants to be a deep purple, and that portrays quite a bit of its personality.
So coal is a deep purple mineral locked up in black or brown.
Yeah, most people paint it black. Poor old coal out there, it gets a really black reputation.
It does. It certainly does. So what's a contented rock? If those are stressed rocks, what's a contented rock like?
Oh, a contented rock would have to be, for me, a limestone. And something that's grown on the Barrier Reef and in beautiful tropical seas and really enjoyed life.
Yes, as you say, just like a person.
Absolutely.
Yes, no, you've won me over. I'm with you. I get this 100%. I gather actually that sometimes you like to taste rocks.
Well, rocks have different smells and different tastes. Tasting a rock, you get the texture almost immediately. I mean, to put your tongue on a quartz is completely different to putting your tongue on a sandstone, for example, or to put your tongue on a limestone is very different to putting your tongue on a basalt, and their bouquet is different as well.
This is wonderful. So we could do a blindfolded test with you, could we? I could give you a granite and a basalt and a bit of sandstone, and you could tell them?
Actually, you've just given me a great idea, and I have some Scottish friends who want to do a blind whiskey tasting. I think I could reciprocate now. Thank you for that, Michael.
With a blind rock test. Now, look, you've been senior consultant to a number of major petroleum companies. How many petrol executives are interested in the arts? Is there a lot of crossover between the world of the petroleum company and the world of the arts?
There is. I think to be a geologist, one has to deal with the unknown a lot. One of the few science subjects where there's this sort of unknown space that you have to fill in every now and then. And my paintings attempt to not only pull in the man in the street, because I want them to be art, first of all, and secondly, to tell a story about the earth. But I also want to get into the scientists that are out there and the oil people that I've mixed with out there. I want them to be interested too. So they would expect a certain colour for a rock. They might expect a certain texture or a shape for a certain rock. And I attempt to excite them or shock them as well by bringing them into the art so they'll ask questions as well. So I've had a pretty interesting following, and a lot of my paintings have been sold to engineers and geologists, earth scientists.
Well, John, it's been terrific to meet you. Thank you so much for coming by and having a chat.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, Michael.
Dr. John H. Jackson, also known as the Rock Doctor, or Dr. Rock, is a geologist and an artist. And the book about his work, or the book that presents his work, is called The Art of the Underworld, and it's published by Media Dynamics. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN.